I wish I'd have bought the first one to come out.
What stuff?
Computers.
Oh, yeah.
All that.
You wish you would have bought the first one?
Yeah, and you just kept right on going. Then I'd be up there as smart as you.
Welcome back to another episode of The Pursuit of Purpose. My name is Chris Kiefer, and today I am here with some conversations that I have been having with my grandpa. He is 96 years old. Lives in Rathdrum, Idaho. He's actually lived in Rathdrum his entire life. And I've been meeting with him weekly over the last 6 months and just asking him about his life. So I'm going to be chopping these episodes and these conversations up, I should say, into episodes in the coming weeks. And I'll kind of mix them in with other episodes. So this is the first compilation of just kind of the highlights of the conversations that I've had with my grandpa. And all I have to say is, if you have a living grandparent or maybe a parent who is getting into their 90s, it's been an incredible experience to get to ask my grandpa about what life was like not that long ago. And one of the things that I found really interesting was he's been alive for almost a century. And when you hear him talk about how life was then and how little they had and how simple their life was compared to the craziness that is today's world, I just found it very nurturing and just like grounding to be reminded of all the blessings that we have in our life. So take a listen. I would love feedback on this. What questions would you like me to ask my grandpa? Anything like that, please shoot me an email or text me. My website is chriskiefer.com. You can find a form there to send in some questions. But really appreciate you all listening and enjoy the conversations with my grandpa, Bill.
I think you told me this story. This was like 10 years ago you told me this story. Someone brought some cigarettes to school.
Oh, I did.
You brought cigarettes?
I and Pistorius went out in the backwoods and smoked them cigarettes. Went out there at noon hour. And then we smoked pine needles so the teacher wouldn't smell them on our breath.
You smoked pine needles?
No, or we chewed. Have to chew the pine needles.
Oh.
Pistorius always says that's how come he never smoked. He just hated them pine needles.
So where did you get the cigarettes from? Who knows?
I don't know. Pistorius says, maybe you got them from your dad. And I said, no. I said, I wasn't too bright, but I was bright enough not to ever take a cigarette from my dad.
Oh, yeah? So he was a smoker?
I'm saying he was 50 years old when he quit smoking.
Wasn't it really common back then?
Like, oh, yeah.
Everyone smoked, right?
Yeah. Howard and Bob smoked, and they just quit, just like Dad did. They didn't take nothing for it or nothing. They just quit.
What's the coolest thing you've ever done, the dumbest thing you've ever done, the thing you're most proud of?
Well, we went over and we tipped over a few toilets. That's what you mean.
Oh, like porta-potties?
We tipped over one guy named Harry Hutchison. And Louis Young, he wasn't as fast as we was. He was in the rear, and Harry shot Louis right in the butt with us. A 12-gauge, and had a shot. Louis had BBs stuck right in his butt. We told him that teach you to run faster.
I have told other people this. Like my first memories of seeing Natalie. It's funny because in my story, actually, this involves you. Do you remember? I came over here for Easter. This was before Natalie and I were dating, and my family had come up, and I was staying here, but my family left to go back to Oregon. And I asked you if you could give me a ride over to a friend's house.
Oh, I remember taking you over there.
You remember, though, I just said, I'm riding back with a friend?
Yeah.
And then you dropped me off, and Natalie was out there, and she said hello and everything. Do you remember saying anything else about that?
I remember telling Chris a hell of a lot smarter than I thought he was.
I've told many people that story of you saying that.
Yeah.
And you identifying, you were probably the first person in my family circle that was aware that Chris was trying to make a move on Natalie.
Yeah.
Do you remember any stories like that about Betty?
Oh, no.
Or like the first time, like when was the first time that you remember seeing Betty or hearing about Betty or someone told you or you talked to her or whatever?
Well, Betty, you see, she went to school over on Prairie, on that little school over there. But their eighth grade came into Rathdrum to graduate. And that's the first time I seen Betty.
And you would have been sixth grade?
No, eighth grade, same as Betty.
Oh, because I always remember you got held back, but you were...
I got held back in the first grade, though.
Oh, okay. So you were in eighth grade, and they had the graduation ceremony together?
Yeah. Well, see, there was only, what the hell, there was only three from over there on Prairie, you know, from Betty's school.
Only three eighth graders?
And there was only two until Betty went from the seventh grade up to the eighth grade. Because she was the only one in the seventh grade, so they moved her up to the eighth.
And they just said, you're graduating this year?
That's how come we was together. She skipped a grade, not flunked a grade. So.
Yeah. And then what, like back then, these are the things that are super interesting to me. When you're interested in dating someone, how does a boy and a girl know that, hey, I'm interested in you? Did you guys call it boyfriend and girlfriend? Did you like...
Well, we was in the same class together, went to school together.
But at some point, you have to, there has to be hey, that's my girl. You can't go on dates with her. Or, you know what I mean? What's that look like?
I don't remember doing anything like that.
What would you guys do for fun?
Go to dances.
Oh, so they had dances? Swing dancing?
They had a place out at Newman Lake called Honeymoon Bay.
Okay.
We went out there almost every Saturday.
And that would have been like in high school?
Everybody went out there.
In high school?
Yeah.
So what kind of dancing would you guys do? Was it like swing dancing or just like
nonsense? No swing, nothing like that.
Just silly dancing?
No silly dancing, just regular dancing.
And that was, what type of music did they listen to?
Just regular music.
Well, what's regular? I don't know any songs from back then. Do you remember any songs that were at the dance?
I don't remember the names of songs. I could never dance too good anyway.
Was it live
when
music?
When I was in school, there was a girl named Dorothy Nagel and Edna Fredenberg. And they used to try to teach me how to dance. They had a hell of a time. My sister said I was the worst dancer she ever danced with. Ain't that something for your sister to say?
That's interesting.
But Dorothy and Edna were pretty good. They were a grade behind me, but they were sure nice girls.
And they tried to teach you?
Oh, yeah. Hell, they was the whiz. Every time they'd have a school dance, boy, they was.
And this is in high school or
eighth,
seventh, eighth grade?
Yeah, in high school.
Yeah. And you said once a week, everyone would go out to Newman Lake?
Well, yeah, just about every.
During the school year?
Well, no, during the summer, mostly.
Oh, okay. Just on like Friday nights or something?
Saturday nights, in the end of summertime.
Was it out in the field or was there a barn?
Oh, no,
or...
I told you, it was at Honeymoon Bay, right on Newman Lake.
But what is Honeymoon Bay? Is it a building or a...
Honeymoon Bay is a lake. That's the name of the lake.
Oh, okay. So it was like on the beach or something?
Newman Lake. Uh-huh. See, you heard of Newman Lake.
I know where Newman Lake is.
You know where it's at?
Yeah.
Well, Honeymoon Bay is on Newman Lake.
But then as far as the dance itself, like today, when we go to a dance, there's like businesses or like the bar or whatever.
I know,
whatever.
It's a whole lot different now.
But it was just like out on the beach, basically, or on the grass next to the lake?
It was just a big building right there on the lake.
And would they have food and stuff and... Or is it just dancing, basically?
Everybody bring your own drink.
Oh, really? Well, someone obviously owned the building, but it wasn't like a business thing where you had to pay to get
into. Well, I would imagine whoever owned the building, you had to pay to get into the dance. So I imagine he made a little money.
Okay.
I would imagine.
I'm assuming this was probably like a quarter or 10 cents or something to get in?
Yeah, probably about 50 cents, I would imagine.
And was it live music or did they just play
speakers?
Oh,
no, they had live music.
They did play live music? Would you and, like, because what's the age difference between Doris, you, and the next one?
Howard?
Yeah.
2 years between each and the
other. So were you and Doris going at the same time, or you and Howard? Like, were you overlapping in high school where you guys would all go together?
Not that I know of, no.
So you
Doris
just...
was really a good dancer. Everybody liked to dance with Doris.
Oh, yeah?
Except me.
Because she told you you were terrible?
Yeah.
Do you remember, would Betty go out there too? Or?
Oh, sure.
And this is...
I never went out there without her.
You said like a situation like that where you're mad or frustrated.
The only thing I ever heard your dad say about any kids was Joe.
Oh, yeah?
Did you ever hear what he was... It was on a Saturday when your dad was... down at the school doing something, and Joe's down there shooting baskets, you know. And Terry said he watched him for a little bit, and then he went and tried to show Joe how to shoot. And Joe, he did it for a couple times, and Joe says, I'll do it my way. And Terry said, boy, some coaches are going to have their hands full with that kid.
Did any of your kids, including my dad, were they ever teased? Or did you ever have conversations like that with them?
The only one I ever had was Terry. He was a freshman. I thought he was on the A squad, playing on the A squad. Anyway, he came home and he was telling me something about Bingston doing this, Bingston doing that. I says, Terry, I don't give a goddamn. If Bingston tells you to get on your hands and knees and play ball, then you get on your hands and knees and play ball. And that's the last want any of my kids ever to ever come home and say anything about a coach.
Oh, he was complaining about his coach.
Yeah. Bingston. Bingston was a good coach, too, especially for guys underneath, and that's where Terry played.
Oh, yeah. And would you go to a lot of his games?
I went to every one. Never missed one.
Oh, yeah? Was there, like, away games, too?
You drive all of them. All of them. Never missed a game.
How did you swing that, or what was the why prioritize that?
What do you mean?
Well, going to every single game. Do you feel like everybody's parents did that, or was that just you that were like...
I didn't care about anybody else's parents. I just did it.
Yeah.
I and Betty. Betty was always there, too. Yeah, it didn't make any difference where they played. We was there.
Why do you think that was a thing that you prioritized?
I just like to watch them play.
And did you do that with all of your kids?
Did it for all, every one of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny. The reason I'm asking that is because I just gave a talk to this group about how my dad never missed a basketball game of mine. And it's interesting that it's like, yeah. I feel like that's an inherited trait, you know? Recently, like, heard that it's important to make sure that whatever your aspirations are in life, it's good to have specific goals.
Yeah.
But you need to make sure that you're picking goals that you can never actually achieve, if that makes sense. Because it's a never-ending pursuit, right? If you check all the boxes on your what you're trying to accomplish in life, then you get to 60 or 50 or whatever, and you're like, well, I did everything I wanted to do, and now what? So you still have to discover, like, what's that thing that's going to fulfill and be, like, something to motivate you for your whole life? Does that make sense? As opposed to, like, I want to buy this house, and that's, like, all you're fixated on. And then you get the house, and it's like, okay, now what? You know?
Yeah. I always wanted to go to Germany, but I never did make it. I mean, after I came home from the Army,
yeah,
I wanted to go back over there, but I never did make it.
Would you say that was like a dream or a goal of yours?
Yeah, just a dream. Liz is going over there.
Yeah.
And I showed her a picture. See, my dad's dad, so it'd be my grandpa. See, he came from Germany, and they were in the beer business over there. And they got big kegs of beer, barrels.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I'll bet each one of them barrels hold 500 gallons.
Oh, yeah?
They're big barrels. And there's four or five, in fact, my grandpa and about four or five other guys all standing in front of them. And there was a lot of Kiefers over there. And I always kind of wanted to go back and see. And there's a tavern over there called Kiefer's.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you know which city it's in?
It's Frankfurt.
I feel like I can think of a dozen ways to make this happen, but would you, and again, there's lots of details, but if the opportunity presented itself to go visit Germany, would you go?
Can't see.
Well, you could still
would be
could
no sense some, of going
you
now.
You could see some stuff.
Oh, I see
you could
some
drink
stuff.
The beer at the Kiefer's Tavern,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, if we could find it. Frankfurt's an awful big town.
But there's the internet now.
Well, that's right.
That changes things.
Yeah.
My thought is, I have a couple ideas. I have a couple friends that live in Germany, but there's also the hardest part or the most uncomfortable part would be the plane ride. It's a long plane ride. But the other option would be taking a boat over, like a cruise ship or something, which would be more comfortable. It would just take a lot longer. Like, I don't actually know how long it takes to cross the Atlantic.
A cruise ship would probably take you...
A week?
Yeah, I was going to say 7-8 days.
Yeah.
When we went over, it took us 11 days. But we was in kind of a small ship, too.
But are you, I guess what I'm saying, is there any reason you couldn't fly?
Not that I know of.
Okay, I'm just curious, like, this is how, like, so many things in my life, I don't know where I get this from, but it's just like, well, why the hell not? Like, what's the, if we can do it and we can make it happen, like, why would we not? Try to do it, you know, because there's lots of creative ways.
That was my problem. See, I never could make up enough money and, you know, quit my job long enough to go over there.
Oh, yeah. And why do you think, like, when you reflect back on that, when you say I could never quit my job, was it you putting pressure on yourself or was it bills or what was the thing that was it fear of, like, not having enough money?
No, I just didn't. I couldn't do it all. And pay my taxes and all that stuff, too, see?
Yeah. What years would this have been? Would this like been something that you would have gone over with Betty, or was this after Betty was gone?
It was before. I was thinking about, I would have liked to went over right after I got out of the Army.
Oh, yeah?
But I couldn't do it.
And what year did you get out of the Army?
In 53.
Okay.
50. Might have been right at the end of 52.
And when did you get married?
In 53.
Oh, okay. So you would have, your initial idea was go before you got married? Or was it going to be like a honeymoon thing?
Oh, it was going to be like, and I couldn't even give it a thought then.
Cause, yeah.
You know.
So that's one thing. Is there any other, like, any things that you accomplished that you remember being 30? Because, again, I'm 33. So, like, what do you recall, like, the aspirations, the things, the places you wanted to go, the experiences that you wanted to have that you did achieve and you were grateful for?
Well, the only thing I really did was build that house there in Rathdrum.
That was a big project?
Well, it was for me.
Yeah.
When you don't know what you're doing, you know.
Yeah.
But I stumbled through it.
How did you learn how to do all that?
I didn't. I just did it. I had a guy come over, and he was going to kind of rough in. And the way I had it done, you walk in the back door, and you go downstairs. There's no landing there or nothing. That's the way I had it done. But he changed all that.
Oh, really?
Well, he had to. And you just can't walk in the back door and go down the basement.
Right. What other accomplishments, then you look back, are you most proud of or grateful for?
Well, raised 5 kids.
Yeah.
That's about as good as you can get.
Yeah.
Of course, Betty, she did probably most of it. I was up in camp.
Logging?
Yeah. See, we stayed in camp up there. We stayed in there for the first 8 years that I worked in the woods. We stayed in camp.
And how long per stay? Like, pardon? You'd go there for how long and then come back and then stay for how
long? Oh, well, once in a while we'd come back probably on a Wednesday night once in a while. Sometimes we'd stay there all week, just come home on the weekends. Just however the job was.
And when did you retire? Like, when were you totally done logging?
Well, kind of helped me when I got that tree on my knee. I fell a tree and was just, you know, all it was, the place had been logged and they was going to burn it. So Connie wanted me to go down there and just knock down all the stuff that hadn't been knocked down.
Yeah.
So I fell this one little tree and it went over and he hit 2 other trees. And it was just like I didn't even notice. I just figured it'd go on through. But it was just like an arrow. I picked up my saw and I started walking. That thing, them 2 trees shot that thing back and hit me in the knee.
And so then that, shortly after you had to retire?
That was just about, it was in the 80s, so it was about time. And then Connie, he got screwed up. He always bragged about this bookkeeper he had, how much money that guy was saving him and stuff like that. Well, he did save Connie a lot of money, but in the long run, the government got on him and took everything Connie owned. He had to sell all of his equipment, all the land he bought. He had to dump all that stuff. The government took it all.
Because he was avoiding paying taxes?
He didn't avoid paying them. He just, it was just like he did all the saws. He took saw rental from me. All the saws. He didn't put a nickel in that saw. But if he took saw rental, he got to count that as taxes. See? He took that off on his taxes. See?
Oh, wow.
So if you count all the saws, and he did that with lots of other stuff too, that bookkeeper. Connie, he just kept bragging him up. Next thing he knew, government had him.
Do you have any experiences or stories of people that you feel were pursuing wealth or money that you personally know? That like corrupted them or ruined their life because of that?
Connie Roth is the only one I know of that he was really doing good until he got that guy. 1 year, Connie took 60 million feet out of Coeur d'Alene.
60 million feet of trees?
Yeah.
Wow. Lumber.
Yeah, logs. That's a lot of wood.
That's how many different loggers and stuff he had?
It was just him.
Oh, he did it personally? But didn't,
not personally, no. But
you worked for him.
Yeah. All the guys sawing for him.
Yeah.
Skidding.
But he got, I would say, he wasn't like corrupted by money. He just thought he was doing good and then had avoided taxes.
He was kind of corrupted by Toa. He wanted to be better than anybody else around, you know.
Mm.
He gave the University of Idaho $1,000 every year, just the football team.
Oh, okay.
He liked football.
And he did that back.
And he'd put on parties and there were 10, 15 guys out. He'd he'd spend all the money for them and all that stuff. And then you go for him with him and say, you want a nickel a log more? No, I can't afford it. No. I never should have stayed there in the woods. I should have quit.
Why do you say that?
Because he screwed me out of my Social Security.
So whose Social Security do you get now?
I get Social Security, but I would have got twice. I only get $1,000 something now. Whereas if Connie hadn't have screwed me out of it, I'd get $2,000.
This is a more of a wondering question. Like, tell me how you do this or what? How does your mind work? But when I told you joking about the internet, right? If I didn't have the internet, it would feel like jail.
Yeah.
It's not supposed to be offensive in any way. I'm just genuinely trying to understand. But if someone took away internet, took away my eyesight, took away my car, and I wasn't able to go anywhere unless someone came to my house and got me, or I didn't know when people were going to come, they just would come when they want to go.
Yeah.
That sounds like prison.
Like it is.
I would struggle to do anything.
It takes a while to get used to it, I can tell you that.
How do you get used to it? Or what do you do with that?
There's nothing else you can do. You just.
That's
just the way it is. You know what I've always wished? That when all this stuff first come out, I wish I'd have bought the first one to come out.
What stuff?
Computers.
Everything. Oh, yeah.
All that.
You wish you would have bought the first one?
Yeah, and you just kept right on going. Then I'd be up there as smart as you.
But you didn't. So you're saying you regret that now because you feel like
there's
a lot of stuff you could do, but you don't know how? Do you think about that prompt of imagining what people are going to say about you? Have you ever spent time thinking of, like, what are the characteristics or the memories or the things that people will say about you at your funeral?
I'm glad he's gone, probably. it all depends on who it is, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't think I got any enemies. I mean, I like just about everybody.
So you'd say that you strove to be a likable or...
Well, I don't try to be. I just be what I am.
Okay. Tell me about that.
Well, I really ain't nothing to say. I am what I am, and that's just it, you know.
Right.
Thanks so much for listening. If you found anything interesting, I'd love to hear feedback. What other questions would you like to ask my grandpa? I'm still going to his house weekly and meeting with him, and would love to get your feedback on what you found interesting, what else you'd like to know about life back then. But yeah, send those over to me when you have a moment. We'll see you next time. And now a quick word from our sponsor, which is Boolean Review. Boolean is a review software that my wife and I own, and we sell this software to home service businesses. So I know there are many different people that listen to this podcast, but if you know someone, an electrician, an HVAC business, a painting company, maybe a coffee stand, someone that is providing service to customers and get found online by customers, we would love to talk to them. This is a review software that is the highest converting review software in the home service space in particular. And if you're wondering what that means, if you have 100 clients in your business, the typical business gets between 1% to 2% of those customers. So for every 100, they would get one person or two people to leave them a review on Google. Other review softwares get between 3 and 5%, and the Boolean review software gets 20% of your customers to leave you Google reviews. And these are fantastic Google reviews with lots of words, keywords that are going to help with SEO, pictures, stories, the names of your employees. So if you want to learn more, check out BooleanReview.com.